We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the third canto, chapter 26, entitled Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, text number 34. Bhutanam chidradatridvam bahirantaramevacha pranindriyatmadisnyadvam Navaso vritti lakshana Bhutanam chidradatridva Bahirantaramevacha Pranindriyatmadisnyadva Navaso vritti lakshana Bhutanam chidradatridvam Bahirantaramevacha Pranindriyatmadisnyadvam Navaso vritti lakshana Bhutanam of all living entities Chidradatritvam, the accommodation of room. Bahi, external. Antaram, internal. Eva, also. Cha, end. Prana, of the vital air. Indriya, the senses, Atma, and the mind, Disnyadvam, being the field of activities, Nabasa, of the ethereal element, Vritti, activities, Lakshana, characteristics. Translation. The activities and characteristics of the ethereal element can be observed as accommodation for the room for the external and internal existences of all living entities, namely the field of activities of the vital air, the senses, and the mind. Purport. The mind, the senses, and the vital force, or living entity having forms, although they are not, have forms, although they are not visible to the naked eye. Form rests in subtle existence in the sky, and internally it is perceived as the veins within the body and the circulation of the vital air. Externally, there are invisible forms of sense objects. The production of the invisible sense objects is the external activity of the ethereal element, and the circulation of vital air and blood is its internal activity. That subtle form exists in the ether has been proven by modern science by transmission of television, by which forms of photographs of one place are transmitted to another place by the action of the ethereal element. That is very nicely explained here. This verse is the potential basis of great scientific research work, for it explains how subtle forms are generated from the ethereal element, what their characteristics and actions are, and how the tangible elements, namely air, fire, water, and earth, are manifested from the subtle form. Mental activities or psychological actions of thinking, feeling, and willing are also activities on the platform of eternal existence. The statement in Bhagavad Gita that the mental situation at the time of death is the basis of the next birth is also corroborated in this verse. Mental existence transforms into tangible form as soon as there is an opportunity due to contamination or development of the gross elements from subtle form. There are many aspects to material nature which are beyond our sensual perception. And therefore, it is not possible to understand the material nature by dint of our own intelligence. One scientist raised the question that will we ever be able to understand the brain through the brain, right? And that's only the brain, right? What to speak of the total material energy. It will not be possible. Srimad Bhagavatam deals with this matter in the 10th canto. In the Brahma Vimohan Lila, we find descriptions how Lord Brahma, after Krishna has expanded himself and all the cows and cowherd boys and shown his four-armed forms and all that, then Lord Brahma is saying that if the scientist would ever be able to count all the atoms within the universe, even if, then still they would have no notion of your qualities at all. What if ever we could count the snowflakes that are falling from heaven? Amen. So these things will be very difficult to achieve. But Prabhupada said, even if they do, even if they would, on one occasion, then what? Right? Then what? Then still they would not know a fragment of the splendor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ekam Singh Stito Jagat. This entire universe is nothing but a spark of my splendor. That is the Bhagavad Gita. So it is not possible to so easily understand the Lord. Prabhupada so many times challenged the scientist to make an egg, right? To just produce an egg. And a real egg that could produce chickens and so forth, right? And he said that they cannot do, right? And simply post data check and things like that. So then once in Germany, there's Dr. Wolf Rutkai. He said that, yes, but what if they one day can actually make life? What if they'll actually succeed? What if? So Prabhupada said, so what, you know? If there's a man who goes into a nightclub and he is dancing like a dog, right, he's imitating a dog, everyone will come to see him, Prabhupada said. You know, everyone will come and pay money to see, whereas you can see a dog in the real street, right? In the street you can see a real dog, yes? But somehow or other, when a man imitates a dog in a nightclub, people pay money. He said, because people are very fond of imitation. So, in this age, right, we see how people are bewildered by the external. When it glitters, when it looks impressive, then yes, then they will accept, right? But not much substance. Hollywood, glamour, Disneyland are the emblems of this shallowness of the materialistic people of this age, right? Who have no time to ponder on deeper questions and who don't want to because they are afraid. If they think of the temporary nature of material existence and how ultimately everything in this world ends with death, then they think, oh, this is depressing, this is horrible. Don't mention such things. Why are you bringing this up? Right? But the reality is that the time of death is inevitable and will occur for everyone. However, Bhagavad Gita immediately gives a perspective on that. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam charityanti kaleveram tam tam evaiti kunteya sadatad bhava bhavitaha. That whatever state of being one remembers at the time of death, that carries us forward to the next body. So here it is described then that that state of thinking, feeling and willing are on the ethereal platform also manifesting and even in form. Here it is said that mental activities or psychological actions of thinking, feeling and willing are also activities on the platform of the ethereal existence. In other words, our thoughts and the activities in our mind are not only manifesting in our mind, but they are even manifesting in ether. And in that way, we can say that the ether has become affected by the consciousness of the people. Right? and therefore a particular place is affected in that way and has a particular atmosphere. And therefore people say, good, good, good vibrations, and things like that, to establish that some, the eater is actually positive. The eater is full of positive activity, positive thinking, feeling, and willing. Therefore, the consciousness of people has a direct effect upon the eater. Not only the consciousness, Prabhupada points out that television, radio, and all these kind of things are also using the eater, and in fact polluting the eater. Therefore, the eater itself has an effect upon people to agitate their senses. Although we may not be noticing it on the gross platform, although we are not able to directly perceive those forms, they do affect us. Therefore, we see that on higher planetary systems, the eater is perfectly controlled, because at all times there is transcendental sound vibration. It is said that on the planets of the Kinaras, that Garuda has the form of a Kinara. Right? So the Kinaras have wings, etc., and they can fly. And it is said when Garuda is flapping his wings, that then the sound of the Samaveda is produced. In other words, the ether in that particular planet is being penetrated by the Vedic sound vibration. So wherever that sound vibration of the Veda is present, there immediately the entire atmosphere changes. Therefore, it is very important that we transmit this transcendental sound everywhere in order to purify the effect of the that the ether has upon the consciousness. Another interesting point that we can base upon this verse is the point about the potency of the of mantras, either the Maha Mantra or the potency of the Gayatri Mantra in recordings, because this point has at times been questioned. Prabhupada used both, right? He used the recordings of the holy name, and he used also recordings of the Gayatri Mantra for second initiation, when Prabhupada was not able to perform that function personally. He would simply send a tape and have like a senior disciple play it to the candidate for second initiation. And then that person could sit in the yagya performed by that senior disciple. In that way, Prabhupada conducted many initiations by letter, and because he was not able to personally do so. And at that time, he played these tapes. And they played these tapes. So the very fact that the sound is manifest in the ether makes it that the effect of the Gayatri Mantra is manifest in the ether. So Prabhupada, in this way, used modern technology which can capture sounds from the ether on recordings or in transmissions or in various ways. Right? So this is... we know that the transcendental sound vibration coming through us, through these recordings, has great effect on us. Because through this sound vibration, we begin to chant the holy name. It is like the echo. It is said that the echo in the forest is like the chanting of the trees. If we call out the holy name, then it echoes off the trees, and that is their chanting. So in this way, we hear today still the echo of the chanting of Prabhupada. Right? Still, it is echoing on all kinds of recordings. Of course, this is not an eternal thing. It is only the echo. At one point, it will not be there anymore. But for now, we can not hear Prabhupada directly, but we hear the echo. And it still is his chanting. It still works. It's still very potent. It is still transcendental by hearing such transcendental recordings, because these forms have been registered, forms from the subtle plane. So Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining this point that there is a subtle reality. And Srimad Bhagavatam is establishing that, and Prabhupada makes that link to modern science. And that is important because modern science tends to deny the existence of the subtle. It tends to deny the existence of any subtler dimensions than what can be directly perceived. But actually, the fact that radio and TV transmissions are going on is dealing with this more subtle level of existence. Right? So Bhagavatam is pointing that out and is making that distinction between gross level of existence, subtle level of existence. And it is very interesting that it links the level of the mind where thinking, feeling, and willing is taking place to the level of the eater. Right? That these two are like very closely connected. That's interesting. In that way, this philosophy is kind of making it easier for science, right, to approach the most subtle, the soul, right? To go from gross body to subtle body and to finally accept the soul. So by these kind of purports and explanations, Prabhupada is preparing the way or cutting down the resistance of the materialistic persons who have doubt about the existence of the soul. It is undermining that by proving that there is subtle applications, many, right, that are happening right under our very nose. We have these applications. So in the same way, we can appreciate that if the subtle does exist, then maybe also the soul. So in this way, we can bring the this understanding. And once we accept the soul, then we accept eternal reality. And when we accept eternal reality, then all our priorities change. Because this is the thing. It is like when we are... I was reading some predictions given by different scientists about the new millennium. And one of them, sure enough, said it that now by green technology, right, no longer gray technology, but now green technology. The technology of the previous age, right, where the steam engine was invented and then finally to electronics and all these things, this is all in the category of gray technology. But green technology is referring to biogenetic engineering, right? So this green technology, they say, this is the technology of the new millennium. They say, this is it. This is the breakthrough. Now we have mapped out the genetic structure of the human being, and we will very soon be able to manipulate all kinds of combinations of genes to the point where we can make any species we like. So they were predicting that soon we will be able in this way to check old age. And man can live forever. There it came again. Man can live forever. So it is the same old theme that recurs in different forms. Because this tendency to overcome the effects of birth, death, disease, and old age. That tendency will always be there. And therefore, no matter how complex we make our society, how complex we make our scientific arrangements, still these fundamental principles will remain the center of our challenge. Right? Sooner or later, it looks that there are so many challenges, challenges in all direction in modern times. But when we come back to more fundamental aspects, then we notice that birth, death, old age and disease are the fundamental problems of life that will be encountered and that will have to be conquered. Right? So science sooner or later preoccupies itself with these matters. But the reality is that there is no material solution. There is only a spiritual solution. And the matter is already solved. We do not need to worry how to become deathless. We are already deathless. It is simply a matter of realizing that. And therefore, we need the dissemination of transcendental knowledge. So knowledge describing the more subtle aspects of material nature is like plowing the field for growing transcendental knowledge. This is kind of preliminary information giving in Srimad Bhagavatam so that we can establish faith in the absolute truth about the eternal relationship of the eternal spirit soul with the eternal supreme word, nityanityanam chetanas chetanam ekubhavanam yuvididati kamam, that we are all dependent upon the eternal supreme word, being eternal beings ourselves, eternally, the servants of the supreme word, Krishna Sarubhai, Jivera Sarubhai Krishna Nityadas, that the eternal form of the living entity is to serve Krishna always. Then this material existence becomes more and more insignificant, less essential. Then we live in the spiritual reality. We see that great devotees of the Lord in consciousness are more concerned with Golok Vrindavan and with Krishna and with the reality of serving Krishna and how Krishna is in control than with the earthly reality. They're not very interested in these earthly matters. We see that Srila Gaurakasurdas Babaji was sitting in Mayapur chanting the holy name of the Lord, and that he was having real problems with his eyesight. So therefore, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to take him to a doctor in Calcutta. But Babaji Maharaj refused and said, "Why would I go to such a sinful place?" Right? So his point was, why waste any time with that? I'm here in the holy dham, I'm chanting, everything is wonderful. So what would be the reason to go to such a sinful place as Calcutta? Well, but you're going blind. Well, that's not very relevant. That's no impediment to my chanting. After the time I close my eyes anyway. So what is the problem while chanting, right? Don't really need these eyes for chanting. As long as the tongue works, no problem. And we'll keep on chanting. So this was his spirit, right? Very, very transcendental spirit, right? Really only caring about chanting the holy name, caring about Krishna in the form of his holy name. We also see that on one occasion they were going to celebrate the appearance day of Sanatana Goswami, and that Guru Goswami Babaji Maharaj said, today we will have a festival, and all the devotees are looking forward. Wow, a big feast for something. That's going to be wonderful. And then after some time, somebody said, but would you mind if we, just one question, where are we going to get all the ingredients from? And Guru Goswami Babaji said, the ingredients are all here. And he showed his japa mala. He said, this is all we need for a festival. Our japa malas. So in that way, that is true. That is the message that comes from the transcendental acharyas, right, who put transcendence first. All that is important is our japa mala, and all other things are not important. Sarva upadhi vinirmuktam muktam tat paratvena nirmalam. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. Only the pleasure of the senses of the Lord is important. And forget all the other designations in this world or all the other positions in this world. So this is like very, very profound and very difficult to realize. But we must at least meditate. The fact that Gaura Goswami Das Babaji Maharaj manifested himself in this way in the world is to give a message to us. Right? It was not required for him to do so, obviously. I mean, he was clearly at the transcendental stage, a resident of the spiritual world who was not concerned with matter. But he was here in this material world as a preacher. Although it may have been thought that he was as a Babaji, more inclined towards Bhajanandi or towards his own Bhajan, no, he did so as a preacher in the Sankirtan movement and showed that also within the Sankirtan movement, this is the spirit, such a spirit of transcendence. And that stands for us, for all generations of Vaishnavas to come. And we are remembering that this is really what counts, transcendence, and that somehow or other, that is the only real importance in our life. And all other things, well, they come and go, and you never know, right? Nobody knows the future. We have no idea what tomorrow will look like. Nobody knows. Let us see what happens on 11th of September this year, right? You never know, right? Anything can happen, or any other day of the year. Something might happen. So, we may be predicting. And this predicting can also be done on the basis of what is in the ether. Actually, within the ether, we can also see the manifestations of past, present, and future, and that these are also already indicated. Nowadays, in science, in quantum mechanics, right, they are seeing that there is an influence, right, of the observer on what's going to happen. And they have, they can predict many things, you know, like they have some experiments where at random pictures are being produced. There are two types of pictures that they use. Pictures that are peaceful and calm, and pictures that are agitating and causing anxiety, you know, like, or cause some tension, like a lion, you know, roaring, right? That causes a little bit of some reaction, right? So on a graph, they have detectors on people, and these detectors show that the person is becoming a little excited, right, by the exciting pictures, different varieties, right? And there's the other, the, you know, the dull pictures, you see the graph is just horizontal, and the other one, whew, there's a peak. So, the interesting part is, then you have this machine which is at random producing different pictures. Just like, you know, there's no people involved choosing pictures, right? Nothing. And then, the graph already shows up the signal, right, or the people as they are waiting for the picture to show up. Right? A certain anticipation builds up in them, and that shows up on the graph. And it already corresponds with the picture they're going to see. Right? It already corresponds. It's like if they're going to see the agitating picture already before they actually saw it, the graph went up. And if it's a dull picture, already before. And there's an experiment like this, and it was published in some dissertation. And this experiment proved that the person already had some sensitivity towards the future. Because these things are already manifest on the subtle plane. Right? On the subtle plane, they are already causing their effect in the ether. Just like when a boat is going through the water, then the waves are all around it, right? The waves that are caused by the boat are just moving along and moving kind of along with the boat and affect a whole big area. So in the same way, we see that events kind of cause wave effects in the ether. And in this way, we can understand that on the subtle plane, past, present, and future are also manifest in the subtle forms. And so, quantum mechanics is preoccupying itself with these matters. And said, like, a thing is what it is only in its relationship with other objects. Right? One can only define an object in terms of its relationship with other objects. Right? So we agree with that, but we would say one can only determine a thing in relation, in its relation to Krishna. Right? That is the only way anything can be defined. So it is true that there is no such thing as independent existence. Everything depends. Our existence is measured in relationship to something else. That is a fact, right? But the only way to actually understand our true self is in relation to Krishna. Only when we take to devotional service to Krishna will we actually understand our true self. If we are measuring ourselves in relation to anything in the material world, right, then we are either fast or slow, right? Compared to a snail, we are very fast. Right? There were lots of snails on the path around the temple in Durban in the garden, you know, and I was walking and we are very fast. And there was one snail, right? He was crawling on the path, and as I was going to Mangalartik one morning, I saw him, and the next morning he was still crawling on the same path. I went to Mangalartik again the next morning, and he had moved about 1.5 meters. That was about it. And he was still there, you know. He was slow, right? So, in comparison to that snail, we are very, very, very fast. God, well, was I fast, you know? I thought it was like he moved 1.5 meters in 24 hours. I was flying. But then the next day, I was sitting in a chair which was flying with 1,000 kilometers an hour through the sky. Right? And that was really a bit too fast for my taste. Right? I would have preferred to something a little more natural. So, in this way, everything is relative. Our position is always relative. Sometimes fast, sometimes slow. Sometimes you think, oh, I'm so fast. Remember when we were kids, we were running and thinking we're so fast, we're so fast. So this is not only there in human beings, but also in dogs, right? Especially in India, you can see this, that that dogs are lying at the side of the road and try to compete with the cars, right? You know, well, in the West they have no chance, you've given up, right? But in India they still have a chance, you know, this old ambassador comes, you know, clang, clang, you know, coming down the road, and this dog just runs past, you know, and just go, runs next to the car, and then they always try to bite the tires, you know, that's the next thing, you know, they always make biting gestures at the tires. It's really funny, you know, it's like, they do this, you know, and they just, it's macho, you know, it's totally macho, right? Hey, look at me, you know, like, tough guy, you know, woof, woof, right? It's just macho. So, here he's thinking, he's enjoying his speed, you know, his sense of how powerful and how speedy he is, right? But then, in another condition of life, he's so slow. So slow. We see so many squashed dogs on the highway. Too slow for that car, doggy. Right? So, like that, either fast or slow, strong or weak, beautiful or ugly, it's all relative to what we compare it with. The ladies on this planet may be very, very beautiful in the eyes of certain living entities, but if you compare them to the ladies on the heavenly planets, my God, you know, you'd never want to look at one again on this planet. I say, God, look at that, you know. What a horror, right? Compared to the beauty of the ladies on the heavenly planets. And that, compared to the ladies on Vaikuntha, is just inconceivable, right? How beautiful these ladies are in Vaikuntha. So, like that, beauty in this world also is relative. So everything is relative. But as soon as we compare it to Krishna, everything gets its perspective. It's absolute perspective. When we measure it to Krishna, it gets its absolute perspective, and suddenly we know. Therefore, a devotee knows the answers to all questions. He knows everything. Right? A Vaishnava knows everything because he knows the relevance of everything. He knows how important or unimportant anything is. And therefore, he knows the answers to all questions. He knows everything because he can put everything next to Krishna and immediately he knows, right, what the value is. So this is how a devotee knows the answers to all questions. All right. I'll stop with that. Maybe there are questions. Mm-hmm. I would think it's a contributing factor. Yeah, that the pollution of the ether would certainly be a contributing factor why Ashtanga Yoga is very difficult to execute at this time, because dhyana or meditation is one of the aspects of Ashtanga Yoga, and obviously all this pollution makes it very difficult to be peaceful. Also, of course, there are other factors, you know, like the personal weakness of the individual who's trying to practice, etc. But this is one of the factors, the pollution of the ether, definitely. Pollution of the ether may be contributing to all kinds of thoughts in people's minds that they attribute to themselves, but that are actually coming from outside sources. Right? So many things come into our head just by pollution of the ether. So to purify the ether is very important. Therefore, to stand there on the street corner and just chant Hare Krishna is very important. Hare Nam is very important. It immediately cuts right through all that pollution. It can purify the ether. Just like the sages bathing in the Ganges are purifying the Ganges, so it is said, from all the sinful activities that are deposited by different people there, the ether can be purified by the chanting of the holy name. Right? So all the pollution can be taken out by the chanting of the holy name. So therefore, we must do kirtan everywhere to purify the ether. Yeah.
But on the other hand, they have so many concepts, constructs, which are just logical.
Right.
Like wormholes, black holes.
That's right.
Antimatter, particles traveling back in time, just to make the model in balance.
And right.
That they accept. They think
they accept.
This is revolutionary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. They are like. Yeah, that this is. This is like. This is due to false ego. And false ego is making us pride. It's making us proud, you see. Only when there's purified ego and we realize our dependence on the Supreme Lord. Can there be humility? And only then is it possible to question our own conclusions. But when we become proud, then immediately we become attached to the complexities of our own reasoning. You see, we make a nice logical theory, and there's a whole chain of conclusions, you know, one based on the other, and it looks very impressive and complex. So immediately, the scientist becomes very attached to this. Yes, this is like, wow, this was an amazing concept. Right? This is incredible. It's unique. No one's ever thought this, and I have come up with this, and this is wonderful, and therefore I'll defend it with my life. You know, if you come near and try and say anything, I'll shoot it down. In this way, it is a form of self-indulgence. Right? It is a form of self-indulgence. It's an addiction. The speculation is a form of mental sense gratification, of enjoying one's own reasoning and one's own conclusions. But these are good arguments that within scientific worldviews itself, there are so many abstractions, right, which are like so depending on so many conditions. Some time ago there was that publication about the cosmic dust and cosmic winds, you know, that were causing galaxies to come into existence. And they had perceived that there were like cosmic storms, right, which caused cosmic dust to blow in those cosmic winds, right? And they said that in these cosmic winds, which were like, you know, if you would compare them to mundane storms, I mean, they were storms, you know, inconceivable. And that in these inconceivable storms, like tiny cosmic particles would cluster together. And the fact that this clustering tendency is there was to prove how the galaxies were formed. We finally have the key to, you know, the creation of the galaxies. I mean, if you hear this kind of speculation, then they make jumps. They make such incredible, huge jumps in their reasoning, right? That it's like, and all just based on some idea without any proof. Therefore, they ought to not have so many problems with considering the possibility of the Supreme Lord. They are two, you know. We're not asking them to make any bigger jumps than they are already making, right? A little bigger, but not much bigger, you know. Just from their enormous, incountable, incountable scope of theory, right? I mean, the scientists go so far that it cannot even be measured anymore, that it cannot even be counted anymore in the elements that they're taking up in their theories. We ask them just to go one step further. We ask them to go unlimited to the Supreme Lord. That's all. So, they should be ready to consider that. And many scientists are. Many scientists are. The skeptic, right, who is simply accepting only what he can perceive through the senses or prove through some logical theory, even he is on shaky ground, right? He's on very shaky ground because he cannot prove anything. That's the problem. I mean, if you become skeptic, right, then it has been said that the skeptic would do well to be skeptic about his own beliefs, right? That's the point. So the skeptic who has difficulties in accepting the possibility of God, we turn around to the skeptic and ask him what he believes in, right? What he accepts as truth. And then we are skeptic about that, right? Until in the end, he has to admit that that tiny little bit of security that he stands on, right? That actually, that also cannot be at all proven as a fact. Therefore, he's in a great vacuum because there's nothing he can prove, not even that he exists, right? Right? Not even that anything exists. Even Descartes' argument doesn't stand up for one who wants to attack it. I think, therefore I exist. The Buddhists are ready to attack that. Right? So many philosophers were ready to attack that. So no, that you may say. The Buddhists wouldn't agree with you. Any other question? Yeah, it is the Gayatri Mantra is not potent when it is not received in a disciplic succession. You see. So it doesn't work. Yeah. So it's not recommended to listen to such tapes. You know, the Hindus, they make tapes, right, of singing the Gayatri Mantra. You know, nicely, Om Bhur, etc. Right, but that is not recommended. So I hear these tapes sometimes. When I in my travels, I encounter them in people's houses, but it is not recommended. It's not like that will help to purify the eater. Whether you go to hell, that is a very big statement, which I don't think Prabhupada said it like that. I think Prabhupada said that it's useless. I think he said it has no effect. Right? It has no effect. And in one sense, for us to reach out prematurely to the Gayatri Mantra without having received it from the spiritual master and knowing that that's not the desire of the spiritual master, that's not beneficial. See? That's not good. That will not help us. That creates in us a big anatta, that we are trying to be independent from the spiritual master, right? And do what we want, right? Our own experience of spiritual life. So that will never help us. So we might wind up in hell if we are going against the order of the spiritual master. Could happen. There's other orders we follow then, so they may save us, but from hell. But at the same time, we will never get the full mercy. It's sense gratification.
There is an example in Croatia. There was one devotee. He find a computer Beatri Mantra.
Yeah.
He start to chant, and they put him on the altar. And he thought, okay, this is Krishna's arrangement. That I find Krishna gave me a Beatri to. And he just started to chant. He's chanting Beatri Mantra without receiving from spiritual master. We hear maybe 1 month ago. Bhaktivai Bhavaswan from Germany told this also another devotee chant Beatri. And Bhaktivai Bhavaswan told him, you will go to hell if you chant Beatri without receiving from the spiritual master. So we see it from you a little bit different.
Yeah, but not so much different. Bhaktivai Bhav Maharaj, well, what he said. His answer is like very strong, and the action of that devotee was also very, very strong. I mean, her question was, what if you play some tape or something like that, you know, some Hindu tape of the Gayatri. But I'm saying, okay, I understand. So what I gave an answer to her question. Now, if you would have asked me, what if a devotee is taking the Gayatri mantra from some source and goes on the altar, etc., what will happen to him? I would say he'll go to hell. Yeah, that's total offense. I mean, he's a rascal. See, if someone is a little curious about the Gayatri and just listen to a tape, you know, I don't think it's in the same category as a person who deliberately tries to step over initiation and just starts chanting Gayatri and says, I think that's...
Psh.
Maybe externally. I think this devotee he was a nice devotee, but he's become bewildered. I think he was nice, but he made a mistake. So nice people make mistakes and then temporarily can be not nice. Yeah. When they deviate, then they lose their niceness. So he's losing it fast. And how to help him? Some or other try and bring him back to Prabhupada's lotus feet. Preach about Prabhupada's glories. Say, look, you know, don't be a fool. Don't try to be over intelligent. Just do what Prabhupada said. He came as the savior. Prabhupada didn't introduce it. Don't try and introduce your own thing. Follow what Prabhupada said. What's the problem in getting it from a spiritual master anyway? What is his problem? So take first again. Take first again. That's his problem. Take shelter of the senior Vaishnavas. Don't just go on your own taking Gayatri. Can't do that. No, what is the problem? I mean, actually taking shelter of a senior Vaishnava again. When the spiritual master falls, that's obviously very painful. And the tendency of a disciple is to just say, I'll never put my faith again in anyone. Once burned, twice shy. But, you know, that should not be done. One should see that the spiritual master was at one point a very nice representative of the Sampradaya, but due to circumstances he made mistakes and fell down. All right, that has happened. Learned a lot of good things from him, got a lot of mercy from him. Now it's time to, for some time one may focus on Prabhupada, and then one should still also take the guidance of senior Vaishnavas, right? Living Vaishnavas. Because if you're alone with Prabhupada, Right. Who will tell you a little more of this and a little less of that? Right. Who will interfere in your everyday life and set the priority for you? Right. One person, the living spiritual master is giving us personal instruction and tells us personally what, where we should put more energy in which area. To some you will say a little more sadhana. To others you'll say a little more preaching. To again others you'll, each one you'll give a personal instruction. So, one has to, a connection with a living spiritual master is very important. One cannot just ignore that just because a spiritual master fell down and now I'll forget about it. No, this is not not wise. And even if one cannot immediately come to taking initiation, one must take shelter of a Vaishnava. And if one does want initiations and the benefit of like being a Brahmin and all these things, then one must pay the price of surrendering to a spiritual authority. Then the Brahminical, because Brahminical standard means surrendered servant of the spiritual master. One of the Gayatri mantras in particular is glorifying the spiritual master. Right? It's like meditation on the spiritual master. So it's very important. Two, actually. So how can you chant the mantra if there's no guru to meditate on?